This is Professor Moshe Benovitz of the Schechter Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. My topic for this Chodesh Tov podcast is How to Tell a Story, Two Mishneya Conceptions of the Haggadah. Chodesh Tov is a monthly 10-minute podcast that is a joint venture of the Schechter Rabbinical Seminary in Jerusalem, the Ziegler School of Rabbinic Studies in Los Angeles, the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, and the International Rabbinical Assembly. The rudiments of the Haggadah are found in Mishnah Psachim, chapter 10. Scholars are divided as to whether the oldest portion of this material dates from Second Temple times or from Yavne, shortly after the destruction of the Temple. Much of this scholarly discussion centers around the identity of the Rabban Gamliel mentioned in Mishnah Psachim 10:5. In any event, the Torah itself commands us a number of times to explain the significance of the Passover rituals to our children. Even if the earliest extant examples of this preserved in the Mishnah date from the years preceding or immediately following the destruction of the Temple. In describing the part of the Seder known nowadays as Magid, Mishnah Psachim 10:4 says as follows. They pour a second cup for him, and here the son questions his father. And if the son has insufficient understanding, his father teaches him. Why is this night different from all other nights? On all other nights we dip once. On this night we dip twice. On all other nights we eat leavened and unleavened bread. On this night only unleavened bread. On all other nights we eat meat roasted, stewed, or boiled. On this night only roasted. And according to the son's understanding, his father instructs him. He begins with shame and concludes with praise, and expounds from, "My father was a wandering Aramean," until he completes the passage. This translation follows the best Mishnah manuscripts, according to which the child asks three questions, one pertaining to each of the required foods eaten at the Seder, the Paschal lamb, matzah, and maror. Why, asks the child, do we dip bitter herbs with charoset, in addition to the usual salad or crudités dipped in dressing? And why do we eat exclusively unleavened bread? And why do we eat exclusively roasted meat? The parent is to answer the child according to his or her level of intelligence, basing the answer on the first-person summary of the story of the Exodus found in Deuteronomy 26:5-8, which he or she is to read and explain to the child. That much is clear, but there is one curious line stuck in the middle of this Mishnah that is hard to understand. In telling the child the story of the Exodus, says the Mishnah, one should begin with shame and end with praise. Matchil bignut u'mesayim b'shevach. What does this mean? How on earth can one tell the story of the Exodus without beginning with the bad, shameful slavery and ending with the good, praiseworthy freedom? Deuteronomy 26:5-8 clearly begins with shame and ends with praise, as would any coherent version of the Exodus story. The Amora Rav was apparently disturbed by this question, and he therefore determined that shame and praise in this sentence refer not to the shame of slavery and praise for the Exodus, but to the shame of idol worship and the praise of coming close to God, neither of which are explicitly mentioned in the verses in Deuteronomy which are to be expounded at the Seder. But this clearly is not the plain meaning of the Mishnah. The Amora Samuel was clearly correct in interpreting the shame mentioned in the Mishnah in its simplest sense, as the shame of slavery, and the praise as the praise for the joy of freedom. But why does the Mishnah have to tell us to tell the story in order? Wouldn't anyone telling the story of Exodus begin with the shame of slavery and end with the triumphant joy of freedom? Let us leave that question aside for a minute and turn to the following Mishnah. After Mishnah 4 tells the parent to instruct the child on his own level, making sure to begin with shame and conclude with praise, and expound from "My father was a wandering Aramean" until he completes the passage, Mishnah 5 continues, Rabban Gamliel says, "Whoever does not say the following three things on Passover has not fulfilled his obligation, the Paschal lamb, matzah, and bitter herbs. The Paschal lamb, because the omnipresent one passed over the houses of our ancestors in Egypt. Bitter herbs, because the Egyptians embittered the lives of our ancestors in Egypt. Matzah, because our ancestors were redeemed from Egypt." At first glance, this Mishnah is even harder to understand than the previous one. The Torah commands us to tell our children the story of the Exodus on Passover, and it also commands us to eat the Paschal lamb, at least when the temple is around, and matzah and bitter herbs. If we tell the story and eat the foods, haven't we discharged all of these obligations? What does this Mishnah add? What does Rabban Gamliel mean when he insists that we say the Paschal lamb, matzah, and bitter herbs, and little explanations associated with each? To recap, we have two questions. Why does Mishnah 4 tell us to tell the Exodus story beginning with shame and concluding with praise? Is there any other way to tell the story? And what is Rabban Gamliel talking about in Mishnah 5 when he warns us to say Paschal lamb, matzah, and bitter herbs, or else we haven't fulfilled our obligation? What obligation haven't we fulfilled if we ate the proper foods and told the story? I think a single insight can answer both of these questions. Mishnah 4 and Mishnah 5 should be seen as a single unit which contains a dispute about how to tell children the Passover story. The anonymous Tana of Mishnah 4 says you must tell the story so that the child will understand it on his own level, but you must also make sure to begin with shame and end with praise, that is, to tell the story in order, and you must base the explanation on a specific biblical text, Deuteronomy 26, 5-8. Not so, says Rabban Gamliel. Don't bother starting with a biblical text, and don't even bother to tell the story in chronological order, beginning with the shame of slavery and ending with the joy of freedom. Doing so will not ensure that you fulfill the biblical obligation to tell the story of the Exodus on Passover night. The only way to fulfill the obligation of Vehigadta Levincha, of telling the Passover story, is through the visual and gastronomic teaching aids found on the table, the Paschal lamb, the matzah, and the maror. See, smell, and taste the roasted offering, and start by talking about the highlight of the story, that fateful night on which God saved our firstborn. See, smell, and taste the maror, and tell of the bitter slavery that preceded that fateful night. Taste the matzah and talk about the exodus that followed that fateful night. The order is not important. The coherence of the story is not important. Using biblical verses is certainly not important. But one thing is absolutely required: building the story around the three foods that are on the table, the three foods that the child asked about in the Mishnaic version of Manishtana. As if to illustrate this point, Rabban Gamliel's three explanations have been preserved in two different orders in various texts of the Mishnah. The printed editions of the Mishnah and our Haggadah have the order Pesach, Matzah, and Maror. The best manuscripts of the Mishnah have the order Pesach, Maror, and Matzah. In both versions, the story starts in the middle, with the events of midnight on Passover, the blood on the doorposts, the consumption of the Paschal offering, the slaying and rescue of the firstborn. In our version, it moves on to tell of the subsequent exodus from Egypt, and then backtracks to the background of the story, the bitter slavery. In the Mishnah manuscripts, after the climax of the story, midnight on Passover, we backtrack to the background and then zoom forward to the exodus and freedom. Neither version tells the story in order. Neither begins with shame. One version starts with the good stuff, the rescue and the exodus, and leaves the bad stuff, slavery, for last. The other starts with the highlight, flashes back, and ends at the end. After the child asks the questions about the food on the table, the Tanakhama of Mishnah 4 has us lecture him on the Passover story. Teach each child on his or her own level, says the Tana, but use the traditional methodology of expounding Torah verses, use the following specific Torah verses, and make sure to begin at the beginning and end at the end, from shame to praise. In Mishnah 5, one can almost hear Rabban Gamliel's frustration in his retort to this approach. He says to the Tana of Mishnah 4, "Your child asked you about Maror, Matzah, and the Paschal lamb, and you didn't answer his questions. You claim to be teaching him on his own level, but your answer is a prepackaged, pat, intellectual response that does not fulfill the central obligation of the evening. Vehigadta Levincha, educate your child. You did not fulfill the number one responsibility of an educator. You didn't listen. To teach your child, you have to listen first to what he is asking. To keep his interest, you have to be responsive, not overbearing and pedantic. Don't worry about the order in which you tell the story. Eventually the child will get the point. And don't bore the child with biblical verses. Talk about food. Build the story around the food. Hit the highlight first, then flashback or progress as you see fit. The only relevant factor is keeping the child excited and interested. If you lecture the child rather than engaging the child and answering his or her questions, you have not fulfilled your obligation. The Tanakama apparently found this psychodynamic approach too liberal for his taste. The child might find it interesting, but he will not really have learned anything. If you start by talking about the rescue of the firstborn and then move on to talk about slavery and freedom or freedom and slavery, you may excite the child's imagination, but you will only confuse him as to the storyline itself, and you are not teaching him Torah. Try to keep it on his level, but stick to the narrative and stick to Torah. The notion that Mishnah 4 and Mishnah 5 are a machloket, a Tanaitic dispute, enables us to understand the phrases we found difficult in each. The Tanakama insists that the story be told in chronological order, beginning with shame and ending with praise, because Rabban Gamliel tells us to ignore chronology in favor of highlights and flashbacks. What does Rabban Gamliel mean when he says you have not fulfilled your obligation if you don't say Pesach, Matzah, and Maror? He means that in his view, the lengthy chronological exposition of the Exodus story based on verses in Deuteronomy 26 does not fulfill the obligation of Vehigadeta Levincha, because you have not answered his or her questions, which were about food. The editor of our Haggadah combined the two views, which were originally mutually exclusive. After our children ask the Manishtana, we answer them by telling them the Exodus story in order, beginning with shame and ending with praise, and expounding Deuteronomy verses 5 through 8. After that lengthy discourse, we cite Rabban Gamliel's insistence on talking about the foods which piqued the child's curiosity in the first place. But his words have lost their punch by being appended to the very Haggadah which he deemed useless. We pay lip service to the foods on the table by reciting Rabban Gamliel's three explanations after we have told the story chronologically. But by this time, Rabban Gamliel's point is lost. We have lost track of the questions in the Manishtana. The children are no longer paying attention and may be asleep. And we have already told the story in consecutive narrative, so little is added by repeating the story out of order. Ultimately, the editors of the Haggadah have opted for the Tanakama standard of coherence, at the expense of Rabban Gamliel's insistence on engaging dialogue, excitement, and experience. Perhaps this is for the best, but depending upon the participants, at times it might be a good idea to vary the order of Magid, moving the Rabban Gamliel passage right up to the beginning, hitting the highlights right after the Manishtana, and only then moving on to Avadim Hayinu and the consecutive narrative based on biblical verses.